Make hiring business students. Which business degrees will land you the plum jobs you covet? That's the subject of today's podcast with Cheryl Dirks, Associate Dean of the Career Management Center at Duke's Fuqua School of Business. Hello, welcome to Admission Straight Talk, Accepted.com's podcast on graduate admissions. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of the show. Thank you for joining us. Before we start today's interview, which will be very career-oriented considering our guest's expertise, I want to encourage you to explore MBA Goals A to Z, which has resources that will help you define and refine your career goals and then present them if you are asked to do so in an essay or interview. It's at exhibit.com/MBA/goals-essay.aspx, and I'll include a link in the show notes to this resource. I also would like to remind you that I value your feedback, good, bad, or ugly, but I especially appreciate any 5-star reviews that you may want to leave for Admission Straight Talk in iTunes. If you find the show valuable, please click on over to iTunes at the end of the podcast and share the love. And even if you don't have 5-star reviews, please do provide your thoughts either on iTunes, our blog, or by sending an email to linda@accepted.com. Now, back to our guest, Cheryl Dirks. Welcome to Admission Straight Talk. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Linda. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. The Dow, I don't know where it's at this moment, but I know it was flirting with record territory. At the same time, yesterday I opened up my paper and I saw that J.P. Morgan was laying off people. So the headlines are alternating between positive and negative, good and bad. Because you're here, we can ask you and we can learn from you who is on the front lines of the job market for young professionals, specifically those with graduate business degrees. What's happening in terms of permanent positions for MBAs, internships for MBAs, and jobs for graduates of your MS in management program? As you know from our conversation, because I had the privilege of talking to Cheryl a few months ago just on the phone, and as any listener to this podcast would know, or anyone who keeps up with Accepted's blog or who has read my book, I am a firm believer in pursuing a graduate degree with a professional goal in mind. That doesn't mean that the student can't change direction or change goals, but that goal, that direction, does provide a lot of guidance in terms of choosing schools, directing one's attention and energies when you arrive on campus, and of course, in the internship and job search. So, Cheryl, let's start with the MBA program. How is recruiting going for MBAs graduating in 2013? How does this year compare to the market for 2012 grads?
That's a great question, Linda. It's always a little bit challenging to compare a year in progress with a completed one, especially because in the last few years, there's been so much just-in-time recruiting that happens, generally speaking, more in the late winter, early spring, even into early summer time period. So based on where we are in the year right now, I would say that the market for particularly MBAs is slightly improved over last year.
Okay.
But it's so again, you know, ask me in 3 months and I'll have a little bit better data, a little bit more complete data. But, you know, we certainly, having come through the bulk of the traditional sorts of on-campus recruiting for both second-year graduates and first-year interns, I think slightly improved is a very fair label of how the year has been so far. But the market, the job market, both for companies seeking to hire MBAs as well as for MBA students seeking positions, is a very fragmented one and almost a bit bipolar when you look at when the peak of activity occurs, in that there's a lot that happens in that fall in that very traditional recruiting time cycle, but then there's also a real spike in activity toward the end of the calendar or at the end of the academic year, when companies are maybe filling spots that they didn't know they were going to have, or maybe someone who said yes then had a family situation and had to back out. And so it's I would say, kind of in summary, slightly improved, but some kind of fundamental things that have changed in the economic difficulties of the last few years, which has really led to this kind of fragmentation of the recruiting market, certainly still remain.
Are there any companies that recruit exclusively, let's say, in the fall season or exclusively in, you know, later in the spring season?
There certainly are, actually. Yeah, that's a great question as well. You know, certainly the companies who you often think of as being very large, traditional MBA employers, like a McKinsey in consulting, like a Goldman Sachs in investment banking, like a Procter & Gamble in consumer goods, will certainly plan to do the bulk of their recruiting, if not all of their recruiting, in the traditional fall time period. What can sometimes happen, even for premium companies such as those, that again, they will find that maybe a job that's not in their large class of associates coming in, but maybe a research position at McKinsey might become available in April. And then they'll look back to those same schools where they have strong recruiting relationships to advertise for that opportunity. In the reverse, the kinds of companies that most often look to the spring tend to be either industries where having an MBA isn't really a requirement. You look at, say, entertainment, for example, or sports and media, where it's a nice to have, and certainly the skills that you learn can be very helpful, but it's not an expectation maybe in the same way that it is in investment banking or in consulting. They will tend to look to more of a just-in-time model, where if you're, you know, very focused on that industry, you may find your job search really just starting to pick up if you knew all along that that was the space that you wanted to go into.
What about for younger companies like Facebook, Google, Amazon?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Are they more just-in-time?
It's interesting. You could take each one of those and kind of dissect what we've seen, at least in terms of the trends. Particularly in the technology space, different companies will often take a different tack on that. In many cases, the company that's more in startup mode, or if they're growing extraordinarily rapidly, may often focus their hiring more on the technology side. And so they may be interested in picking up more folks with undergraduate or master's degrees in technology areas or in engineering, because they're really looking to build the infrastructure of their business, which is the technology side. And then they'll often build business infrastructure around that. And that's clearly what we've seen. You know, your company like Amazon has gotten to the stage where their MBA recruiting is actually quite well established, as is Google's. Whereas Facebook, it tends to be still much more of a just-in-time, sort of very hiring for a very specific business unit, hiring for a very specific objective, because that's kind of where they're at in their life cycle as it relates to kind of recruiting talent and developing it.
So I guess Amazon and Google are grown up, and Facebook is still a teenager. Or
yeah, I guess, so to speak. Exactly. Yeah. And they certainly, again, those are both companies who it would not surprise me at all in any given year to see them do both traditional hiring in the fall and then coming back in April or May with specific needs that come about. And so, again, I think there just really has become this kind of very bifurcated model of hiring MBAs, where there's always going to be this peak of activity in the fall, but then there's also going to be, again, non-traditional sort of MBA industries as well as very specific jobs, maybe in more traditional, so to speak, companies or industries. And it seems like that's kind of, I think we're going to stay there for a while. It developed when the economy was so rough a few years ago, but that really seems to have, it really seems to have hung around, I think in large part because companies, particularly the larger, more traditional MBA employers, are wanting to, and wisely so, be very smart and conservative about forecasting the number of opportunities for which they're going to need MBAs in the next year. One of the big challenges of hiring in the fall is I might be hiring somebody in the fall of 2012, but they might not be coming to work for me until August of 2013. And so to know how many folks I need to hire and with what specific skills or profile in mind, there's an art and a science to that. And so I think companies have gotten to be more conservative, but then they will often come back in the spring to fill in around what their needs may be now that they have a little more information.
Great. Are there any particularly active industries or sectors for MBAs now? Let's again keep a focus on MBAs.
Absolutely. You know, I was looking at our employment from the last year that was completed, so the 2012 grads, and there were 9 industries, and they're kind of the traditional ones that you would typically think of, that hired 4 or more of our students. And so, you know, there's kind of a break in the data there. And so, you know, the top industries in that group were consulting, financial services, technology, consumer products, and healthcare. And so those are kind of your tried and true industries for a lot of top MBA programs and kind of the spaces where they most traditionally will want to go to work and will do that traditional fall sorts of recruiting. I think if you were to look at the type of activity that really picks up in the spring and the summer, I think 2 that are really starting to grow in interest among MBA students are kind of broadly speaking the social impact umbrella,
okay.
And whether that be a job in sustainability at a large employer, say like a Coca-Cola, or whether it be at a foundation, or whether that be at a company like Education Pioneers that's looking to improve the school systems, all of those types of roles fall broadly into the social impact umbrella, but that's an area that's really picking up, and the diversity of interests in that space is very wide. And another area that I think we're starting to certainly see a lot more interest in among our MBA students is in the energy and the environment. And so particularly students who come in with either a strong sciences background or an engineering background, finding that it's no longer just the large, traditional oil and gas companies that might hire MBAs, but maybe a smaller clean tech company or, maybe a venture capital firm that does investments in the energy space. And so, again, just the diversity of employers in that space as well as the diversity of student interest in that space are 2 that I think are really starting to pick up in that MBA arena.
That would kind of go along with the social as a subset of social impact.
Exactly. Absolutely. Kind of it's a little bit embedded in there. And again, it can be a very traditional, it could be a business analyst role at an energy company, whether that be solar, wind, or, oil and gas. But I think they are tied very much together. And so those are really 2 of the areas. I think another area, we're seeing lots of diversification in some of these areas is, I mentioned healthcare as being one of the traditional ones. And again, you're still going to have your larger companies, well-known names that hire, in pharmaceuticals like an Eli Lilly, or med devices, or biotech like an Amgen or a Genentech. But we're also seeing, again, global health is a really big topic, among our students right now. And so students are interested in potentially going to work for organizations that will have an impact on global health. And so you're seeing, again, you're going to continue to have, I think, those traditional employers in that space, but then, more and more students looking at, how do I blend my interests in healthcare and technology and go to work at a company that's in that space, and maybe they're a smaller company instead of a larger employer. And so, again, you're starting to see that real diversification within any particular industry.
Okay. Thank you. Now, the internship market for the MBA, is that pretty much following along what you're seeing in the permanent job market? Is finance still on the ropes? I mean, is the news about JP Morgan yesterday more or less a blip or, more significant?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I wish I had a crystal ball and could very accurately forecast,
right.
Kind of what all of these, what all of the small changes that we hear on a day-to-day basis mean,
right.
Kind of in the bigger picture. But the internship search is really important in the MBA process for a number of reasons. Most MBA students are coming back to get their MBA to change careers usually
sure.
at some level. They might be wanting to to change a job function. You know, maybe they want to go from being more in a research role or an engineering role and moving into a business role like a strategy or marketing or finance. Or maybe they want to change the industry that they work in, or maybe they want to change both. And so it's a really important milestone in that career change process. Again, having come out of the last few years, you know, being so difficult, many students who were significant career changers often had to look at that career change process as really a two-step process as opposed to a one. And so, you know, maybe I get in the industry that I'm interested in, but do the same function as what I've done previously, and then as a second year, I'll be better positioned to really make that wholesale pivot. So that, I think, is extraordinarily important. I think other employers see the name of the employer that, and the type of work that you did over the summer as kind of a validation signal, much in the same way that we will often hear from employers that, well, I know that Duke has already done some of the rigorous screening on the intellectual capacity and the accomplishments because I know that's part of your admissions process. It's a little bit of the same thing with an internship. If I'm an employer, I'm going to look at where you as a candidate spent your summer as a bit of a validation signal. And then there's kind of the obvious carrot, which is that many companies are really looking to their interns as being their primary, if not their only source, for hiring full-time candidates the following year. And so, you know, that yield from having spent 10 to 12 weeks with an employer, and if the employer feels like I'm a good fit and I can do the work, and, they give me that full-time offer, obviously, that's a much, if I say yes to that, I go in with a lot more knowledge and the employer knows a whole lot more about me after having spent that summer internship together than if I'm a second year student whom they've interviewed in the recruiting process. And so, many companies lean very, very heavily on that internship pool as being their primary channel into full-time positions.
Oh, that makes, perfect sense. The whole level of experience with somebody, it's a 3-month interview.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And one of the things that we try to say to our students is, if you find that for whatever reason the work was not for you, whether it be the industry, whether it be the specific company culture, or just the nature of the job, while that is disappointing, and certainly kind of I think the paradigm that most MBAs think of is, I'll get a great internship, I'll get an offer, I'll go back to that same company, and then as a second year I can focus on my MBA experience because I'll know what my job is going to be. And certainly that's a fantastic outcome, both for the employer as well as for the student. But the reality is it's also, that's an important signal as well. If you went into a particular industry or a particular type of job and found out that it was not for you, it's certainly much better to find that out over a 10 to 12 week summer internship and then being able to redirect your efforts as a second year student than having accepted that same job on the full-time side and, 3 months into that figuring out that, oh boy, I'm not a good candidate for this type of work, or this company doesn't fit, doesn't fit my idea of a great culture, or whatever that might be. And so, figuring out how to deal with the less positive experience is also a really extremely important part of the internship process, as well as obviously for those who had the great experience and they want to go back full time.
I think you're raising a great point here. It's less comfortable to find out you don't like
exactly
the path you're going down than to find out you love it. But
yes,
it's extraordinarily important to find it early on in the process.
That's exactly right.
More resources, more time, more energy to a particular course. I had a call, and I don't think I'll ever forget this call, from a parent a few years ago. And this parent was calling me, extraordinarily qualified child who'd gotten, eight offers or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the parent wanted the child to go back to an internship she had as an undergrad at an investment bank. And this was the height of the, the financial meltdown. Okay, so she had all these offers during the meltdown, and she didn't get the offer she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And the parent was lamenting this, but what shocked me most is that the parent really wanted her to go back to the position she had hated.
Because that interesting?
because it was going to make a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah,
and
absolutely.
I was like, why would you want your child to go do what
to be miserable?
Yeah, and invest more time and energy in a path she doesn't want to pursue.
Right.
It makes, you know, I'm like, huh? But anyway, different strokes for different folks. I definitely feel finding out what you don't like is incredibly valuable, though obviously, as I said, much more uncomfortable than finding what you like.
It is. It absolutely is. And I think there's just, you know, clearly, I think one of the things that's true, and this is true for MBAs or Master of Management students or really even at the undergraduate level, is in many cases what you find is these are extraordinarily bright and capable students who have most often, you know, succeeded at everything they've done, and then this is a time where it feels like a failure. And I think there's definitely some just, you know, mental toughness that you have to exercise and some resilience to then go back and say, okay, well, this didn't go as well as I had hoped, but here's what I learned from it, and here's what I'm going to do moving forward. And so, you know, again, there's just as many wonderful stories about, you know, I loved it, I had such a great time, I got exposed to things I never thought I would, and they've offered me a job to go back, and I'm planning to accept. You know, that's, of course, maybe the fairy tale ending if
right.
you're an MBA, but, you know, clearly there are lots of other ways that people end up being successful. And again, I would say you're much better to have spent 10 to 12 weeks figuring that out than getting into a full-time search and then after a year having, you know, feeling like you need to go back out there and try to find another position. So, you know, it's a really important time for MBAs and for employers as well. You know, given the amount of time and energy that it takes to recruit and hire an MBA, there was a survey that was released recently. I think a survey had been done of about 500 MBA employers, and it costs about $10,000 to hire an MBA.
Wow.
If you look at cost to fly candidates back, and then obviously if you level that out across the number of candidates you didn't hire, you know, it's not it is a significant undertaking to recruit and hire an MBA. And so I think both for employers and for students, that internship is extremely important.
It's an investment on both sides.
Exactly.
Just what we were discussing a minute ago, right now on Exhibit.com, Exhibit's Facebook page, there's, you know, a picture and a quote. I've not failed. I've just found 10,000 ways that won't work, Thomas.
Yeah.
It's a very famous quote.
That's exactly right.
I'll include a link to it in the show notes also.
Exactly.
Yeah. Obviously, when you invest time and money, you know, it's well, he did also in all those different filaments. But, again, it's not as comfortable as having a fairy tale ending. It's certainly more
right.
frustrating, but it is very valuable, and it's a lot better than going further down the wrong path.
Yes.
Now, let's turn to the Masters in Management of Science.
Yes.
Can you briefly tell us what that program is, who it's for, and then what kinds of jobs are its grads finding?
Absolutely. So our Master's in Management Science program is in its fourth year right now, and it is a one-year program for primarily students who are either just out of their undergraduate program or who have maybe been working for 1 to 2 years is kind of the most typical for students who have any work experience. So it's entitled, kind of labeled, so to speak, as a pre-experience master's program. And it is 1 year long. Our students start in July, and then they graduate in May. And it includes all of the core courses of the MBA program. And so for a student, you know, kind of the profile of the student who often finds their way to the MMS program is maybe somebody who is getting a science degree, a master's in, or an undergraduate degree in science or biology or a technology area, and maybe they find that they like the what they're learning about, but they like the business side of it.
Right.
And so this is a way, you know, if they're a junior, by the time they figure that out, they may not want to necessarily start all over again and get an undergraduate degree in business. But what they find is they want to add some core business knowledge and skills, particularly in the quantitative and analytical areas, to their undergraduate degree, that's really kind of the ideal profile for the MMS program. And certainly we've had students come in with a little bit more work experience, or maybe an undergraduate degree in business, but maybe they focused more on economics and they, you know, want a broader brush at business. But that's really the core of the program, is they take all of the core courses of the MBA, and are taught by our same faculty. So it's the same faculty who are teaching in the MBA program who teach in our MMS program, but it's just really for an earlier age and stage of student. And so those students graduate again after 1 year in the program, and we track their employment in the same way that we do at our MBAs. And the students are finding many of the jobs that they take are similar or identical to jobs that undergraduates would take. We have 30% of our students going to work in finance, and another 29% from last year's class that went to work into consulting. And so they're going into analyst-type roles at firms like Morgan Stanley and Accenture on the consulting side, or on the corporate side, they're going to work at firms like Apple. And so they're typically going into those entry-level jobs, but doing so with an extra year of training, and in many cases being qualified for jobs that they wouldn't have been qualified for with just, say, in this case, the science example I used, with a bachelor's degree in biology or whatever that might be. And so, you know, as the program has become more known among our employers, what we found is that we get great feedback from our employers about these students coming in with a higher level of knowledge and sophistication of some of the things that you might expect from an MBA, but again, bringing those things into the entry-level analyst role. And I was looking at our salary and employment statistics from this past year, and so our graduates across all industries and functions, their mean starting salary was just a little bit over $57,000. And so that is higher than obviously what you would might expect as an average salary for an undergraduate taking a position. And so they've been quite successful. And I think that the thing that we're continuing to focus on is really educating our employers about the value proposition of this type of degree.
Now, I'm sure, you know, some people will be wondering, if you go for the MS right after college, obviously your opportunity cost is less. It's a one-year program. Presumably it is less expensive than the MBA out-of-pocket also. Are those people going into consulting and going into financial services, are they coming back? If you've graduated four classes already, or this is your fourth year?
This will be our fourth graduating class.
Okay, so do you see, or are you getting any feedback from your earliest grads? Are they thinking that they have to go get the MBA, or are they finding that they don't need it, or do you know yet?
I think it's a little bit too soon to have much data to really draw conclusions on, but I think my sense is so far is that it's a mix of both. You know, if you are in a very traditional, what might be considered a traditional MBA employer, you may find that particularly in some of the bulge bracket banking firms and some of the, you know, the big and very well-known consulting firms, you know, you may find that there's that sense of, well, you work for a few years at the analyst level, and then you go back and get your MBA. But, you know, I think we're also seeing that in both of those areas, employers are realizing that they need to have slightly more flexibility around on-ramps and off-ramps, and that they're particularly interested in keeping really good talent. And so, you know, I think the workplace is also changing in that regard. And so I think you will see a mix. I think you'll see some come back and get their traditional MBA and, you know, may repeat some of the courses that they've had. Others may find that specific executive education or non-credit courses are enough to round out their education. You know, we have a fair number of students working in the sports industry. The sports industry is not typically one where the MBA is all that kind of considered to be a requirement, and so the MS degree may be exactly what they need from a skills and knowledge perspective that, you know, they don't find the need to go back. And so I think in much the same way that individuals' paths are varied when they come to get the MBA, I think that's going to be the case for our MMS graduates as well.
I don't know if you can even answer this question, but does Duke have any plans, or do you know if Duke has any plans to, let's say, allow MS grads to come back and get the MBA and just go into the second year?
You know, we have not crossed that bridge, and I certainly am not the person who would be kind of at the crux of that decision, because obviously it has programmatic implications for classes and electives and all that type of thing. But I think it's certainly a question we're probably going to have to answer at a certain point, and we're kind of still at that relative kind of, I guess maybe if we're not in infancy stage, we're maybe at toddler stage with all of this.
We're going through the whole life cycle on the show.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. And so, you know, or you could also find that, you know, from a kind of age and stage perspective, we also have executive style programs. And so, you know, that could be something that could be very appropriate for somebody who did the MMS program right out of undergrad, but then maybe when they've got 10, 12, 15 years of experience, they come back and get the executive degree, which, while, you know, there may be some things about accounting that are the same, the way you would apply them is going to be very different, because you're probably going to be a manager or a director level at that point. And so, you know, again, I think there's going to be lots of paths, kind of from a career perspective, much in the way that happens with our MBAs after they graduate.
Okay. Now, getting back to MS in management, GMAC's recent survey of employers showed a 35% increase in hiring for MS in management grads in 2012 over 2011. Now, that wasn't just for Duke's program, that was for the class, the degree class. However, the sample in that survey was fairly small. What are you seeing for Duke's grads in terms of demand for the MS management?
We are definitely starting to see an uptick in interest specifically for our MMS students. We have kind of a unique arrangement, or what I think is a unique arrangement for our MMS program. They are programmatically, they are housed by the business school, but we do not have an undergraduate degree like a BSBA or anything like that. And so our students receive career services through the Fuqua Career Management Center, where I work, but then they also have access to Duke undergraduate on-campus recruiting. So, you know, the big firms that are going to come to hire for analyst classes, that type of thing, they also have access to apply for those types of opportunities. And what we've been really pleasantly surprised by within the last 2 years particularly is just the number of companies who have expressed interest in doing MMS only recruiting. It's a small class. It's 120 students. And, you know, their interests are as diverse as our MBA students are, but in a much smaller kind of critical mass from a size perspective. And so, you know, we're never probably going to have 100 companies on campus just recruiting MMS students, because there's only 100 of those students. But we've had a good, healthy number of companies coming on campus to engage with them, maybe when they come to interview their MBAs, then they also do an MMS-specific event, that type of thing. And so it's allowed, I think, hopefully the best of both worlds, in that there's already an infrastructure of recruiting through the University Career Center, but then we can obviously supplement and enhance that with some things that are very specifically targeted toward our MMS program. So, you know, I don't have statistics readily available, but it has been a very healthy increase. So about a third sounds like a very kind of consistent with what we would experience. And I think to a certain extent, some of it is just that awareness is growing of this population, because there are other, you know, one-year management programs out there. And so as employers become more aware of those opportunities, you know, I think they're starting to see what the potential value proposition is.
I mean, I think the awareness also needs to grow among college students and recent graduates.
Exactly.
I was at an MBA fair recently, and a woman came up to me, and she had actually been in grad school and decided she didn't like the path she was going down, basically, and she was more interested in business, and she was saying, well, you know, I don't have work experience, how can I get an MBA? And I said, well, look into the MS in management, and I specifically told her about your program and a couple of others, and she was like taking notes furiously, like, nobody, why didn't I know about this?
Yeah, exactly.
Or what about the senior right now, let's say, who has maybe not found the job of his or her dream?
Yes.
Is the MS in management still accepting applications? Would it be a viable option for them? Maybe it maybe
would
instead
be.
Of a science grad, what about a liberal arts grad?
Exactly.
Oh,
absolutely.
Major.
You know, liberal arts grads do very well in the program. There was an article, and I don't recall what source it was from, but an article that came out a few months ago about some companies who were looking to hire more masters of liberal arts. At Duke, mm-hmm. that's called a MALS degree, a Master of Arts in Liberal Science, or liberal something to that effect,
okay.
anyway. but that, you know, if they weren't finding the talent or the number of folks that they needed, like at the MBA level or in the MBA programs, they were looking for more liberal arts grads because they bring that kind of very broad-based thinking and creativity and problem solving, often, you know, good writing skills, those types of things, and that more and more companies were looking to hire them. Well, somebody who comes into the MMS program with a liberal arts undergraduate degree is kind of that candidate in one package. And mm-hmm. so, you know, they bring in both the liberal arts sort of broader based sort of thinking, often some creativity, that sort of perspective, and then you combine that with the traditional kind of analytical and kind of reasoning and decision making skills that you often see on the MBA side, and that's a really nice marriage for a lot of employers.
Right, and,
so, yes,
and the MMS program is still taking applications.
Yes, they are. They absolutely are. I checked with our admissions office before I talked to you today because I wanted to make sure that I was giving out the correct information.
Yeah.
And our daytime MBA program is accepting applications through March 21st.
Okay.
And our Master of Management Studies program is accepting applications through April 25th. So there is still plenty of time to apply for somebody who finds that this, you know, might be a good way to, you know, put a building block in there toward that next step in their career.
Great. Are there steps, let's change gears slightly now, are there steps applicants can take to prepare themselves for the job search before they get accepted, or perhaps between the time that they're accepted and they actually arrive on campus? I mean, are there things, when you talk to new students, either in the MBA or the MMS program, and they, you know, you're trying to do an assessment or give them career guidance, are there things that you kind of want to take them by the shoulders and shake them and say, why didn't you do this before you got
here? Yes, there are some things that applicants or admitted students can do to really be ready when the academic year starts, whether they're entering an MBA program or a pre-experienced master's like our MMS program. And, you know, I think the mindset is that this is a considerable investment of time and resources, and you want to maximize the time that you have both before the program starts as well as while you're in the program to helping make that investment pay off, not just now, but obviously down the road as well. And so I think really the kind of the first and most important thing that I would recommend, and it might sound a little bit trite, but the students who don't do it, I think, often come to regret it later, is that you really need to look inward first. And you really need to spend some time thinking about, you know, why am I doing this? If I'm only doing this because I didn't get that job at XYZ company that I wanted as an undergrad coming out with my bachelor's degree, or I didn't get that promotion that I wanted in my current job and I'm thinking about getting my MBA, you know, it's not a magic box that's just going to open once you get that degree. And so, you know, really be thoughtful about what it is that you're looking to accomplish. Think about the things you've done in your past, the accomplishments that have given you, you know, pride and satisfaction and have really motivated you, and see what the common threads are that unite those experiences. And it doesn't have to be in the workplace. It could be something you did, again, in college, maybe some club that you started, or, you know, what are the things you're really passionate about? And if you're having a hard time doing that, there are often assessments that the school that you've been accepted to will make available to you. We use an online assessment tool called Career Leader, and we make that available to our incoming MMS and incoming MBA classes over the summer, and really ask that students take that assessment while they're, you know, still before they come to Duke, really, is because once you get in this arena, it's often easy to be influenced by the person who sits next to you in your accounting class is doing. And so we really encourage people to do that kind of before the journey begins. And you know, a good book that we also recommend if you're not in a situation where you've got a school that's going to give you an assessment is there's a good book called Now Discover Your Strengths that has an assessment tool that really allows you to identify your transferable skills. And I think sometimes, particularly for MBAs, when you're looking to be a career changer, you need to think about what is it that I can bring to the table for an employer in a very different job function or very different industry that's really going to make me a value add for them. And that helps to identify those transferable skills and the things that just intuitively you're really, really good at, and you tend to thrive in situations that require you to do certain things. And so I think those are some things that you can do really over the summer. Kind of tactically speaking, find out if your school has a resume format. We at Fuqua use a very specific format that we ask all students to put their resumes in so that when recruiters are reading Fuqua resumes, they know what to look for and where. And, you know, get your resume in that format. I'm sorry,
Linda?
One or two pages? One page. One page for both our daytime MBAs as well as for our MMS students. And okay, we, again, put that format out there in our incoming student website. And, you know, that's, you know, you don't want to think it's done necessarily, because once you get into the environment and start talking to people who are doing the kinds of things that you want to be doing, you may find that you need to position your experience differently. But at least take a cut at getting it into the look of the resume of the school that you're going to. You know, small things that you can do is if you have worked previously, whether it be, you know, as a part-time student worker on campus, if you're an undergraduate going into a master's program, or, you know, if you've worked for 5 years and you're going into an MBA program, make sure you have copies of all of your old job descriptions. If you received an award that you're going to want to note on your resume, make sure you have the description of what that award is. You know, you were awarded, you know, you were one person who received this award out of X number of people within your company, or whatever the case may be. Those are things that you can do that when it comes time to actually putting those accomplishments on paper, you want to make sure you're doing it in a way that's accurate and correct. And once you've left that environment, or bring your old performance reviews with you so you can look back at what are the things that your prior supervisors have said. I think one of the other things that I really recommend that anybody does when they make a major step, like going back to get an advanced degree, is let the people in your professional and personal network know that what you're doing and why. So if you can, even if it has to be done by email, if you don't have time to, you know, make a lot of phone calls, but to let the folks in your, in again, both your personal and professional network know that, hey, I'm taking a new journey, I'm going to get my degree, and here's what I'm hoping I will achieve by doing that. I hope you'll support me and be available for questions as I go throughout my path. And let them know where you're going and keep them posted as you move along. And it's just a really good way to kind of set the stage so that you never know who may kind of be our already in your network who might be able to really help you kind of think about whatever that next stage might be. And it just is a good way to really kind of keep the lines of communication open. So those are some, you know, really simple things that applicants or incoming students can do. Most schools do have a website for their incoming class and will prescribe activities for students to complete before they step on campus. And I would just underscore that, you know, that's really the best time to do them. You don't want to be behind from the first day of orientation. And so to really, you know, take the time while you're getting ready to move, and I know that feels like a really busy time, but to really complete whatever the specific steps that your school might be asking you to do.
I think these are great suggestions. I also want to suggest that, you know, if applicants, you have a professional network, if you don't have a LinkedIn profile set up, set it up.
Oh, absolutely.
And connect on LinkedIn with these people. Just yesterday,
yes,
I was talking with offspring spouse, and she is going for a job, and her supervisor just left her employer. So she no longer has a contact.
Yes.
And I said, you know, I've been beating up your husband about this. He's the offspring, so I can beat him up. I can't beat her up. That you need to connect with these people on LinkedIn.
Yes, absolutely.
Because if all you have is the professional email, if that's the relationship, and they leave, then that contact is gone. If you connect with them on LinkedIn, you can still connect.
Absolutely.
You can post that update.
Yeah.
And I don't know how often they check LinkedIn, but at least you have the contact.
Absolutely. I would completely agree with that. You know, the other thing I would recommend, too, I didn't think of this when I was running down that initial list, is, and again, as trite as it may sound, run a Google search on yourself and before you come into business school and see what pops up with your name. Because, you know, again, if your name is a fairly common one, you wouldn't want a recruiter to do the same thing and get you mixed up with somebody whose name is the same but is not the same person. You know, often you'll have to complete an employment verification process once you get a job offer. And so, you know, you want to think about kind of if a company runs a background check or credit history, ask me to do a drug screening or some other sort of verification process, what would that net up? You know, it as crazy as it sounds, if you're thinking about going into financial services,
sure.
You know, if you have you need to check your credit history and make sure that there's no, you know, inaccuracies on that, because you certainly don't want to get to the point where a company has said, wow, we think you're wonderful. We want to offer you a position. And once you accept, then we'll have you go through all these details and we'll just verify your employment. And then something falls apart because, you know, your credit history had an inaccuracy on it, or whatever the case may be. But just kind of see what others are going to find, either on the internet or kind of elsewhere, if they dig deeper through some sort of a verification process, to just make sure that you're really set up for success once you get to that point in the process where you have a job offer. The other thing I would recommend is that for your listeners and users who are not native English speakers is to really take every opportunity that you can to practice spoken and written English. Many of our international students come to U.S. business schools with the idea of getting a job in the United States, and most of the industries that are open to hiring international students and sponsoring their visa are client-facing industries. And so those are industries where the ability to interact with and develop relationships with customers who are by and large going to be speaking English is going to be extremely critical. And so the language piece, both the informal as well as the formal aspect of the communication process, is an extremely important one. And so, again, while you have that opportunity before coming to business school, you know, if it's taking a class, if it's, you know, doing something online, whatever the case may be, really take advantage of that opportunity before you come to business school to really enhance your verbal English skills.
Thank you so much, Cheryl. That was just fantastic advice. I think our podcast is just about over.
Okay.
Where can applicants learn more about Duke Fuqua's MBA and MMS programs?
Absolutely. A great place to start is our website, and it's www.fuqua.duke.edu. If you're looking at it, or you can just go to Duke and then choose from the different schools, there's a link to Fuqua there as well. And both the MMS program as well as the daytime program has extensive information about it on our website, and also clearly contains a link to contact someone in admissions should you wish to speak with someone. And again, both are accepting applications. The daytime program, I think, is March 20th or about thereabout, and the MMS program is through April 25th. So both are still in the active mode of receiving applications.
Great. Thank you so much again, Cheryl, for being our guest here today and sharing your knowledge of the job market for graduate business students. I'm positive that applicants who listen to this podcast will be much better informed about their career options and how to make the most of them. I hope they'll also take both our opinions really serious and do those assessments, have that direction, frankly, before they start the application process, but certainly before they arrive on campus. Listener, thank you, too, for joining us. Please share your feedback. 5-star reviews on iTunes are particularly welcome. You can leave feedback on iTunes, the blog, or by emailing linda@accepted.com. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by accepted.com, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again in 2 weeks.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.